Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me, Gary LeMaster.
Good morning.
Silent Gary is not going to be silent.
Silent no more.
And Mike couldn't make it today. And so I asked my brother, Chuck, who's a close personal brother, to come in and speak on the show. Chuck had a life in banking, handled billions of dollars, right?
Yes, I worked for two very large multinational banks during my career and managed the investment activity.
And he now writes novels, all available on Amazon. Chuck Williamson. You know, he has thrillers and he has detective stories. It's set in Sedona, so if you folks are interested in that. Well, today we're going to talk about the Republican convention. And I think we divided up who's going to talk about what a little bit, but we're going to talk about the whole thing. But I wanted to get Chuck and Gary's reaction to Hillary Clinton's announcement of her choice for vice president. And I guess, Gary, what do you think of Tim? Tell us a little bit about Tim Kaine and what you think of him as.
I think the thing to that most stands out with Tim Kaine is he's a nice guy. Yeah. He's actually a politician who's a very nice man. I think we should point out that the Democratic convention is going on this week, starting tonight.
Today.
So I think that's important, and I think it'll be important to contrast not only the two conventions. You know, you have the dark vision of the Republican convention of last week and how the world is in chaos, and now you're going to have a more accurate vision of what's going on in the world with the Democratic convention.
And tonight Bernie Sanders is going to be speaking, right? And Michelle Obama and a bunch of really interesting people, and the contrast between the two conventions couldn't be different. I was looking at a list of who's going to be speaking at the Democratic convention. It's filled with governors. It's filled with senators. It's filled with the whole Democratic Party. All the people who are absent for the Republican convention are there. And your take on Tim Kaine, Chuck?
I'm so far impressed with what I've learned about him. I was familiar with the various people that were being touted as potentials, but I didn't know him prior to that point. But he sounds like he's a good man, which is nice. You mentioned the difference between the two-party conventions. The Republican conventions was like one of those scary places at Halloween where you go through and they jump out at you and scream and so on. And the Democratic convention may be like Christmas dinner, some arguments and some so on, but it'll be a lot more placid and less scary, I think.
You know, I'm kind of a facts guy, so I went through the Republican convention and, you know, looked at everything that was being talked about as being, you know, the country's in chaos, the world's in chaos, and virtually everything that they said was a lie. And I would point to Fareed Zakaria's Global Public Square program on CNN, who pointed out this week that the U.S. has emerged from the recession better than any of the world's other major economies. We've produced more than 14 million jobs since 2009, more than the 35 other advanced economies combined. Auto sales have gone up from 9.6 million in 2009 to 16.6 million last year. We're now the world's largest producer of oil and natural gas, surpassing Russia and Saudi Arabia. Our unemployment rate is now below 5% nationwide, near all-time lows. Inflation is low. Stock markets are record highs.
They're trying to create the sense that the end is nigh, right,
at the Republican convention. It's all feelings versus facts.
Yes, and one of the tricks they use, for example, is to say the the number of people in the workforce has dropped. And so the fact that unemployment is below 5%, which is a remarkable achievement, they ignore by saying, well, all these people have dropped out of the workforce. The fact is, we're all baby boomers. We retired. You know, yeah. The fact is the demographics have changed that, not the economics.
And when you look at, you know, one of the big things is Trump's wall along the border with Mexico. And if you look at the immigration since 2009, it's overall a net zero. And I looked up, for Mexicans alone, since 2009, it's a negative 110,000, roughly, immigration. So it's no longer the issue that they make it out to be.
I think the thing is that the convention was a disaster day after day, and it's not just liberals and Democrats that think so. So I'd like to quote, and the man, I may misgarble his last name, but he's Ross Douthat, and he's the one of the
Douthat, I believe.
Douthat. He's one of the two major conservative columnists in the New York Times. And he writes, and I wanted to work with a conservative on this, the Donald Trump National Convention in Cleveland, technically the Republican National Convention, but let's be real. First, it was a showcase for the institutional failure of the Republican Party in the face of Trump's assault. And I think that's the core of what the deeper thing, folks, when we look at all the craziness of the convention, the deeper thing is that the Republican Party as an institution collapsed before Trump. And he goes on to say almost none of these figures made a positive case, the people who are speaking at the convention, for Trumpism, or attempted to explain how his ethno-nationalism fits with a professed Reaganite worldview, which is more like the writer's worldview. But then that worldview also seemed threadbare. Clichés, unconvincing. Its abandonment by Trump voters looks like an inevitable result in hindsight. So what he's saying is that Trump's triumph, the collapse of the Republican Party's institutions, is a result of the fact that the Reaganite repeating of certain things as just didn't work anymore. And so it allowed Trump to move in. Trump may be completely unstable in terms of his politics, but allowed him to move in and capture basically a Republican Party.
Reagan's morning in America optimism has been replaced by be afraid, be very, very afraid.
They're comparing him to Nixon in the Nixonian convention.
Oh, Nixon was a ray of sunshine compared to this guy.
But if you look at the times, the difference between the time when Nixon was running, and you guys are old enough to remember the late 60s, the burning of neighborhoods in all the large cities, there was a reason, the social change, the Vietnam War, there was a strong reason for people to say, well, maybe he's right. Maybe the crime statistics are down dramatically over the last 25 years. If you look at New York City, for example, there were 2,500 murders in New York City in 1990. Now there are about 300.
I'd point out that a few statistics. Worldwide mass killings and genocides, you know, like everyone's afraid of ISIS, are at a near all-time low in history. Homicides both in the U.S. and the world have steadily declined since the 1990s. Victimization of children in the U.S. has dropped dramatically. Reported rape and sexual assaults in the U.S. are near all-time lows. And death of police are at near all-time lows.
Okay. So if all of that is true,
and it is.
Because Gary said it is, and he insists it is, so what is going on? Why is the whole campaign based on fear, hating different groups, Muslims and Mexicans? And why is, if that's all true, if things have been statistically, we look at the statistics, everything's been getting better, Why do we have a campaign that says the exact opposite of the fact?
Because many people, in fact, probably most people, vote based on how they feel about a candidate, how they feel about the environment they're in. They don't sit down like Gary and analyze and research and discover all the facts. He's pretty rare. So it's attracting an emotional audience. And in fact, Newt Gingrich was interviewed on NBC recently and basically admitted that it's not the facts that matter, it's people's feelings. People feeling afraid is what matters. People feeling underemployed or that the economy's bad. So it's based on creating a feeling, albeit a false feeling, but a feeling, and it's working.
Why does it always, the kind of movement that Trump represents, why is it always accompanied by hating of some scapegoat? I mean, it's moved from being Jews and African Americans and so forth. And I mean, the whole history of the United States is one ethnic group disliking the new ethnic group. The English didn't like the Scots-Irish, and the Scots-Irish and the English didn't like the Germans. And so it goes on and on. What's necessary in this that they have somebody to hate, to have somebody to be against, somebody to be afraid of?
Well, it's an emotional issue, and if people feel underemployed, and many people have lost their job, it's not, they may have had a good paying manufacturing job or a coal mining job, and they've lost it. They have reason to be disappointed in the way their life has turned out. What you see in the division with Trump is college-educated whites are about 50-50. But he gets a huge part of people who didn't graduate from high school or just graduated from high school. He's getting 60-70% of the white males in that group. So that group has suffered a lot. I don't know that it's a policy of government, but the fact is, outsourcing manufacturing to the cheapest location has removed many jobs.
But it's while people believe it has to do with trade, there's no doubt that our economy has been disrupted in many ways. Even though the economy is thriving, we have people looking at markets to see how they can disrupt them. And so they look for a disruption like Uber versus the taxi cab industry. It's the whole idea of disrupting the existing
market. Does change,
markets.
Gary, always feel like a small death?
It's always difficult.
Change is always difficult.
You know, right? So if you look at the Rust Belt with the auto manufacturing, for example, the number of jobs that exist in the auto manufacturers today in Detroit and the Midwest, Ohio, et cetera, is a fraction of what they used to be, not because they were outsourced to other countries, but because of robots, of technology. Technology is disrupted. It disrupted my advertising business and industry. It's disrupted virtually everything.
We're looking to have some speakers on the impact of automation. I was at a conference recently, and a social psychologist were there, and she was reporting on the study. I think they did it at Williams College. And they gave students a phony IQ test. Phony IQ test, and they randomly told some of them that they did super well on it and some of it that they did to ghastly. And then they said, well, now we want you to interview this woman for a job. And in half of the things, the woman came in and she had a cross around her neck. And the other half, she had a Star of David around her neck. The people who had done well or had been told they've done spectacularly well on the IQ test showed no discrimination at all. The people who had been told that they were stupid, basically, and they had done badly, got off on downgrading the Jewish women. This is a largely Christian group. So there's a something else going on here besides the pure economics of it.
It's human nature that people who are under distress look for others. It's not their fault that they're having problems. they look for causes beyond themselves.
Doesn't it make them feel better, Gary?
And they want to, they by putting down others, they make themselves feel better.
I think they look for scapegoats. I think that's a lot it. I don't know what you think about it, Chuck.
Well, a lot of this change is inevitable, and you're right, automation will eliminate still more jobs. My career in banking, I saw one job after the other in the operations area get automated, needing fewer people and so on, and that's happening all through all businesses. Even white-collar jobs get eliminated
by automation. You said you spent most of your career laying people off.
I did. I do admit to laying off a lot of people.
And we shouldn't, hundreds.
I mean, hundreds.
Not thousands.
We shouldn't ignore the effects of consolidation too, because that's what the banking industry, for example, went through, and it's what most every industry has gone through, which has been encouraged, by the way, by Republican policies.
Yes. So when I was with a bank that's now part of Wells Fargo, we had two branches in Sedona. We now have one branch for Wells Fargo in Sedona. So the reality is, you wait in a longer line or you use machines now. The machines are replacing people who used to work in Sedona itself.
It seemed to me in your career you worked for the same bank, but it kept changing the name. I never say, what bank is Chuck working for now? Who has bought it? Because the consolidation is not only, it's in broadcasting, right, Gary? Right. It's in banking. It's in,
it's everything.
Who bought Yahoo recently? Verizon. There's a consolidation. Everywhere we see is there's...
Beginning in the 80s, there was a policy I noticed in working in ad agencies is that with large companies, there was a strategy that was put forward that continues till today is that if you have a strong competitor, if you can, buy them out. You know, buy out your competition so you can own...
That's always been the way. That's how the Rockefeller fortune was made, by forcing out all the other steel companies. That's the nature of capitalism. Unregulated capitalism is always tending toward removing competition. The idea that free enterprise is what big businesses want is nonsense. What we want is barriers to entry so there can't be new competitors.
Monopolies are what they
see. Exactly. So when we're talking here about real issues and stuff, let's go back and look at what the Republican convention was talking about. The first night, the theme was be very afraid, right? And they started out with some guy who's on Duck Dynasty. I mean, he was the opening speaker or something.
A former college quarterback with a degree who portrayed, you know, who's quite bright, but portrays himself as a swamp rat.
These Duck Dynasty guys were all fraternity brothers at the University of Arkansas. You should see pictures of them that time. They're very preppy and so on. So yeah. Yeah, they're just college-educated fraternity-type guys who are playing a role.
He's as genuine as the rest of the people that were at the convention.
Well, it works. They do duck hunt a lot in Arkansas.
There was almost nothing positive about Trump the first day. It was all attacks on Hillary Clinton and Obama. I'll give you one example. They brought a woman, I think her name is Patricia Smith, and her son was killed at Benghazi in the attack that killed four Americans. And she said, I blame Hillary Clinton. I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son, personally. And she also said that Obama murdered her son. And she reports, well, let's put it this way. They're using a mother's grief, amplified and massaged by conservative talk radio, so that her story's changed. You know, her story's changed over time, and her story does not compare with the stories of other people who lost folks.
And you can take the mother of Chris Stevens, the ambassador to Libya, who now says, stop using my son to further GOP, you know, talking points. You know, it was not Hillary's fault that he died. It was not Obama's fault that he died.
I mean, the truth is that the events in Benghazi took place a long way from the Secretary of State's decision. If you're Secretary of State, you're going to have to trust the security people that work for you. Because if you don't, second guessing them, and we've gone through this before, As for the controversy, it's just really what bothers me is the press takes it seriously, this controversy about whether the film caused the events or not. And, you know, there were riots in, I think, 40 countries and demonstrations about a film that came out attacking the Islamic religion. And everybody thought that it played a role in this. And it actually, I suspect it actually did.
They can tell that Libya gets its media from Egypt, and there was demonstrations in Egypt before that. I think some people took advantage of that to attack the
Sounds Amazon. Right, yeah.
But I'd also say, going back to the convention, you know, the convention began with the pastor giving the invocation.
Yeah.
Calling Hillary and Democrats the enemy and trying to vilify them. Ben Carson, gave a speech trying to tie Hillary to Lucifer. There were people in the audience, the most prevalent signs and stuff in the audience were Hillary for prison 2016, life's a bitch, don't vote for one, and my favorite, KFC special, this is the most disgusting thing, KFC special, two breasts, two fat thighs, left wing. This was a despicable display of hate.
Well, the whole convention was about hate and fear and it's worrisome that they get so completely separated from facts. So we have someone who had a woman, for example, has genuine emotion about her son dying, and that gets turned into a nonsensical intellectual operation. And I think the whole convention is a little bit like that, and they fact checked it, and they fact checked Pence, and they fact checked
Trump,
and they fact checked almost everybody who spoke. Mm-hmm. They had a scandalous second day. I actually thought the nicest thing on the first day was Trump's wife's speech. Turned out to be partially plagiarized, but I thought it was a
source.
Nice speech. You know, it was the only positive thing that was said.
I agree with you. His children did a good job. They were the high points.
One could say it was a nice speech only because it was plagiarized.
Well, but I think she did a good job, and his children did a good job. Surely you can get your children to say good things about you, or you're a pretty bad father. So he may be an excellent father. I have a way to know, but he would be a horrible president.
Somebody said that it was interesting about his family and his kids is they had no stories about him. You know, they had no stories about dad did this and that. Like Romney's family, for example, had stories that humanized Romney. They couldn't come up with any of those. They just sort of praised him.
Yes, I saw an interview with one of his previous wives, Mrs.
One
Maples,
of his two
Trump,
previous
whatever.
Wives.
I think she goes by Trump still. Marla Trump. And she said she raised the children and the two previous wives pretty much raised the children totally without him until they were ready for college age. And then they began to work part time at his businesses. And so he's been with them as they've matured, but the mothers raised them.
And he's employed many of them, and of course he's funded his son's winery and wine.
They're on the board of Trump Enterprises.
One of his most interesting proposals to me in his tax deal is to eliminate the estate tax. And the way that works is if you have an asset that grows in value but you don't sell it, you pay no taxes on it until you do sell it. But at death, it reprices to the current market. So if you build, I don't know what you're building, let's say 89, if you build the Trump Tower and it's valued at $100 million, and when you die, it's valued at $500 million. If you eliminate the estate tax, no one ever pays any taxes on that appreciation, that gain. So it would enrich not just the Trump family, but all inherited wealth, it would eliminate the current taxes that tend to redistribute some of the wealth on death. And they've always argued that and called it the death tax and talked about that it's small farmers. But it has no impact unless the estate is about $5 million. So it's not little mom-and-pop stores that are going to pay estate taxes. The asset has to be worth at least $5 million before you have any tax. And I think those numbers are planned to go up.
I would say that, I don't know, I'll run this by you and people disagree with me, but I thought Romney was a decent human being.
I did not
like his politics. I think he was cut off from the experience of ordinary American. He was so cut off he didn't even know he was cut off. And privately he said things that were insulting to a lot of Americans. So anybody on Social Security who's ever been on unemployment is part of the scum, right?
And most of all, I don't like his tax evasion and his vulture
right.
capitalism.
But on the other hand, he seemed like a decent human being. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Well, for a tax evader.
But when I look at Trump and his main opponent Cruz, I see what seems to me actually bad people. I think Trump is close to being a sociopath.
I don't think there's any close to it. I think he meets the definition. He certainly meets the clinical definition of narcissist.
And then Cruz is just a vicious SOB, you know, and totally involved in just being himself. I mean, I don't know. Those two guys seem like two of the worst people. As having character, which we used to talk about in American politics.
Pence is no different. He is a bad guy too.
But you don't get to be nominated by either major party, and this has been true our whole lifetime, unless you are personally ambitious and have high self-esteem. It's just Trump is over the top compared to anyone else. But
right.
every nominee thinks that they could run the world's single superpower. Mm-hmm. Otherwise they wouldn't run. So all 17 of those Republicans thought they should run the most powerful, strongest economy, country in the world because they knew how to do it better. So there's always been an ego thing, but Trump seems to be very involved in helping himself. And so it's very worrisome. His support for Putin is very worrisome because he's so largely financed by Russian oligarchs with close ties to him. So his
talk
own
a little bit about that, Chuck. I don't think most of our listeners know about the relationship.
He will not, probably cannot disclose his tax returns because most Western banks, except for Deutsche Bank and the Japanese banks, lost a lot of money in the 80s. So he has trouble getting financing through ordinary means for his projects. Now, many of his projects just have his name on them, and they don't have any other connection to him. But once he actually does himself or acquires himself, he has trouble financing. And the story that's widely distributed in Wall Street, I don't know if anyone has proven it, is that his financing in the last 5 years has come almost exclusively from Russia and from the oligarchs, except for his Deutsche Bank lines of credit, which are secured by good properties. So if you look at his close ties and his change, for example, in the Republican Party platform related to Ukraine and his comments about Putin, well, he is very involved with Russia. And you just wonder, especially now that this Russian stealing of the Democratic emails and servers, this Russian invasion of it being released on the a few days before the Democratic convention, it's clear that Russia is involved in Trump's campaign indirectly. I don't think it's ambiguous. I think it's obvious at this point.
He has an advisor on his campaign who has worked for Putin. And as in, you know, Trump is an admirer of Putin. He's an admirer of you know, he actually admired some aspects of Saddam Hussein, and he likes strong men.
Yeah.
You know,
he likes strong
dictators.
Men. Yes, he likes dictators. All right, so we have the convention, and we have a chaotic mess. The first day, just a hate-filled thing. And then the scandal about plagiarism from a very nice speech that she gave. And then we had Cruz. They invited good old Cruz to give a speech, and he refused to endorse Trump because Trump had insulted his wife, and it also indirectly but meticulously claimed that his father was involved with Lee Harvey Oswald in the assassination of
Kennedy,
JFK.
I think some other things that need to be pointed out along those lines is that four out of the five living GOP presidential candidates from the past, including, you know, presidents, refused to attend the convention. Yeah. That's unheard of. The only one that was there was Bob Dole, who ran against Clinton in 92. The governor of Ohio, the state hosting the convention, John Kasich, refused to attend.
But there was a SIPCOM guy who nobody's ever heard of. You know, he was
Chachi.
On the first. He was on the first thing. Here's a sitcom. Hey, I'm
Happy
a sitcom.
Days,
here's my idea about who should be president. You know,
right.
So the establishment Republican politicians were gone. A lot of them.
I wrote down some comments that were again on Fareed and Zakaria's program yesterday. Brett Stevens of the Wall Street Journal, you know, one of their top. He's on their editorial board. Said about the convention, I felt like I was watching a Monty Python skit of a Nuremberg rally. That's a really staunch conservative saying that. Danielle Pietka of the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative, you know, think tank, said, quote, he came across as the commander-in-chief of Russia, not the United States. It was downright frightening. David Frum of The Atlantic, and he was George W. Bush's speechwriter, says he's going to lose, and Trump's going to lose, and he deserves to lose. Not everyone in America is an unemployed steel worker. You know, it's just one person after another. George, you know, you pointed out before the show, George Will, you know, conservative columnists quit the Republican Party over Trump.
Well, it's absolutely clear that Trump is not the choice of the traditional Republican establishment. He's against free trade, which has been one of their core issues for my whole life.
You worked your whole career with pretty conservative Republican co-workers and friends and stuff. How do you think they're taking this? I mean, they're truthfully, they're in banking and they're in, you know, and they're educated and all that stuff.
What investment people like the most is certainty, and uncertainty scares us. So I have not in contact with anybody on Wall Street, but I would suspect Wall Street is near panic at the idea of a Trump presidency because he just pulls it out his rear all the time. Yeah, he just wings it and does extemporaneous things, unlike the speech, by the way, at the convention, which was carefully written and crafted by professionals. So when he talks on his own,
full of lies and distortions.
Yeah, but when he talks on his own, there's just no telling what he'll say, and it's the opposite. So he has proposed things like rebuilding the infrastructure, which most Democrats would also support, and many other things. At the same time, he's opposed the most massive tax cut in history, which would lead to deficits so staggering that the country would, I don't know how we would even face it. So his ideas are so inconsistent and wing it, there's no strategy behind him. He just says whatever comes in his head.
So Trump's strategy is something like this, and this is on the internet. This guy sells Trump $100,000 worth of pianos for one of his, casinos in Atlantic City. He can't get the money from him. He calls and calls and calls, and they give him the runaround. And finally, months later, other people have paid him pretty promptly. Months later, they say, well, we don't have any money to pay you. So you can either take 70% on the dollar, or you can wait until someday in the far distant future when we have enough money to pay you. And he's a small businessman, so he takes a 30% loss. That's what he wanted to do to American currency.
He talked about doing that to the American debt, negotiating it down, which in effect, if you don't pay at par, you've defaulted. So he's advocated defaulting on the American general obligation debt, which is so bizarre that he only said it once, as far as I know, and somebody slapped him up the side of the head and said, don't ever say that again.
He's also recently talked about pulling out of the World Trade Organization. He's also talked about not fulfilling our role as part of NATO. In certain circumstances, what I get a kick out of is the people that support him, his so-called populist supporters, refer to him as the blue-collar billionaire. As he sits in his gold chairs in his interviews in the atop Trump Tower, he's somehow become a blue-collar populist. Yet every single one of his policies would benefit him and no one else.
Have you ever noticed that his apartment looks a lot like Saddam Hussein's palace?
Exactly.
It has the same ornate gold chairs, or maybe he bought them.
Putin's palace.
Well, so what was his acceptance speech like, Chuck, Gary? I mean, Chuck's researched it, and you said it was more carefully written. How would you describe it?
Well, instead of the fact checkers saying pants on fire, bald faced lie, they said true but misleading over and over again. So it's, if you extract one bit of data, let's say in certain cities, Chicago being one of them, murder rates are up. They're having a war among the drug cartels in Chicago right now. That is true, that the murder rate is up in Chicago, the hometown of our current president. Not that the president gets to decide what the murder rate is. It has more to do with the mayor and the police chief. But if you look at the statistics overall, murder rates are down this year. And so it's not a lie to pick out some cities and say that the murder rate is up. It's just misleading because the rates are actually down.
I would point out that many of the guns involved in the shootings in Chicago come from Pence's Indiana, you know, nearby. Which has loosened its gun laws tremendously.
We start out by saying that Tim Kaine seems like one of the most decent and honorable men in American politics. That's what he seems like. The progressives are who really think there needs to be fundamental change are disappointed because he's a moderate liberal guy. But he seems like a great. What did you guys? What's your take? And what's the record of Trump's choice as vice president, which was considered a conservative or careful choice?
He's tried to outlaw women's rights. He's tried to outlaw gay rights. He's been at the forefront of the Koch-supported ideas, Koch brothers-supported ideas in the country. He has been a true enemy of women.
He's cut taxes in Indiana, though, right?
Well, he is fortunate that he got this chance for a new job because it looked like he was unlikely to get reelected in Indiana. He's not real popular there.
Well, there was Christie who's unlikely to get reelected, too.
Christie had the same problem.
God, he's had a nasty speech. Wow.
They touted Pence's economy or Indiana's economy, but it's lagged behind the rest of the U.S. in general.
He talked about the improvement in the unemployment rate in Indiana and how great that was. This governor had achieved that. Well, it's higher than the national average and improved less than the national average. So the fact that it's improved is true. It's the sort of thing we're talking about, selectively finding truths that support your argument, even though if you look at the broader picture, they're nonsense. And that's what his speech was at the convention, a series of selected things that were semi-true but irrelevant that were pulled straight from actual government statistics in many cases, so they weren't a bald-faced lie. They were just not representative of actual situations.
But it's one speech he didn't wing, right?
Yes, right. It was carefully written.
If you look at Trump's speech, it was 75 minutes, which is, you know, was painfully long. If you look at what factcheck.org had to say about it, there were 8 outright lies through the speech and 6 distortions that they found. And they're not insignificant lies, you know, that you know, he he blames Clinton for a lot of things that you know, I mean, that was the kind of the focus of the convention. It wasn't on what we're going to do for you as a party, what we're going to do for the U.S. It's damn Hillary.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
It's crooked Hillary.
And in fact, they repeatedly criticize Hillary for the deal with Iran and the fact he brought out that he thought it would improve their chances of developing nuclear weapons. Well, the truth is, she wasn't even Secretary of State when those negotiations began. She was Secretary of State when we put the sanctions, additional sanctions on Iran. She didn't negotiate that treaty or have much of anything to do with it. Now, she supported it. And it looks like it will reduce the odds. Iran decided it had to do nuclear weapons after one speech, we think, when the axis of evil was discussed. And they realized Iraq got invaded. North Korea, there was no chance of invasion. How do you prevent the Americans from invading you? You have nuclear weapons. North Korea has proved that. And that's when they decided and went all out to develop them. And that happened long before Hillary.
I know they manipulate the stats. They start from 2008 before Obama has a chance to do anything. Because if they take the stats from 2009 and bring them up, they tell a very different story. So it was a festival of lies and distortions, misinformation,
and hate.
And they brought a lot of small disputes and turned them into, I believe that, you know, the crime rate, the murder rate among undocumented is about, of America, I don't know, 10,000 murders is like 50 a year. So there is some, and they brought forth a guy whose daughter was killed, probably before Obama was in office or just after he got there. But that's irrelevant.
They're
trying to build fury by individual testimony.
We're as safe as we've ever been. The real problem is the open carry and concealed carry of guns, which now the police have to respond to every, you know, event, assuming that the person is armed and being very wary of being shot. I'd like to take just a couple of minutes or a few moments to talk about the platform. I would encourage everybody to go look at the GOP platform, which was written mostly by the Trump supporters. And it's the most ideological document for a political party, you know, I've certainly ever seen. But it calls for going back to trickle-down economics, even though they've been proven to not work. It wants to dramatically increase defense spending, even though we're already spending so much. It goes on and on and on. I really encourage you to look it up.
And Chuck, how would you sum up, and then Gary, how would you guys sum up your experience in experiencing the Republican convention?
Yeah, no, it was a fright night, and I think it worked. He got a bump in the polls from it. So scaring people is often how demagogues end up running countries. I think Trump could be elected. I think the odds are not all that certain that Hillary will be elected. She's a very damaged personality from years of being attacked by the right. So I think there's a real chance we'll have a Trump presidency, and that's a scary situation.
Gary, we got 1 minute. What's your take?
I think it's easy to run a political campaign on fear. I think the biggest problem that Hillary has faced is that she's been the presumptive candidate for 4 years, giving them 4 years to destroy her and attack her. And you know, if you look at the facts, she's the most qualified person for the job, period.
We have periodically have people who want to be on the show, and one of the guys who wanted to be on the show wanted to argue that she wasn't, and she said, well, how can you compare her with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson in their preparation for the president? Well, compare her to anybody else who's run in the last 80 years.
The last person we elected that had no political direct experience won the Second World War. That was Eisenhower. Since then, we've always elected someone with at least some experience.
It's a complicated, running the country and in the our government is a very complicated business.
Thank you for being with us. You can hear this in all our podcasts on our website, vvid.org. And you've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.